When I say Hefei, Kunming, Wuhan, Harbin, and Dalian, you might not know what I'm talking about. They are just a few of China's so-called second-tier cities, and some say they are at the heart of this Asian tiger's roaring economy. Companies the world over have put China at the center of their business strategies. But costs in cities like Shanghai and Guangzhou are rising. As costs in Tier 1 centers of commerce increase, how important will inland cities, with their burgeoning middle classes, become to Canadian entrepreneurs with China on their minds? To help us think this through, I'll speak to two Canadian companies that see smaller second-tier cities playing a big role in their China strategy. Roots Canada, the Canadian retailing icon, is setting up some 90 stores across China. And you might be surprised to hear how far a Vancouver company is going to secure the company's future in China. But first, I have Professor Ronald Kalavsky on the line. Professor Kalavsky is an economic geographer at the University of Tennessee. He has advised Canadian manufacturers and exporters, Canada's largest trade and industry association, on industrial location and trade strategies. Thanks for speaking with me, Professor Kalavsky.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Now, what's the most important consideration for manufacturers or retailers looking to China?
I think first and foremost, and this was emphasized to me by every person I met in China, whether it was a Chinese person or people from the West or Japan or South Korea doing business there, was find local agents and contacts. Universally, everybody said to me, don't do this alone or don't try this alone. Many companies that I spoke to or even anecdotally from Canada and the U.S. have been burned so many times by trying to fly solo in the market. The local contacts, whether it's an agent or a distributor or even hiring local people, one or two local people initially, they know the regional business practices. They know the contacts. And once again, face-to-face contacts mean everything. And I was in Hong Kong, and for example, where much of the manufacturing has left and moved into the Pearl River Delta, but local firms there are kind of specializing now as becoming middlemen or middle people as agents, essentially, between foreign firms looking to do business in China. They act as almost a middleman or an agent there because they know the local market, the Pearl River Delta. So I can't overemphasize enough that that's probably the most important consideration because the local agent will know the lay of the land, both economically and the relationships with local governments.
So what are the advantages to locating in the second tier areas?
First advantage is untapped growth at this point. I think many international firms, Western firms, whether from North America, Europe, or Japan, haven't tapped the middle class in these cities yet. So there is a growing middle class in these cities as far as the retail sector, even in the sector for manufactured goods, business-to-business sales, for example. But also, I think that these cities offer a lot of opportunities for manufacturers as far as cheaper costs, as far as labor. Once again, the rents and leases in Shanghai and Beijing and Pearl River Delta are very expensive. And there's also a problem with increasing salaries. I think the Economist mentioned recently a 15% increase in salaries along the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one other thing I wanted to add, this is more of a geographical aspect, with the access for deep sea vessels as far as the Three Gorges Dam. I think everybody's familiar with the Three Gorges Dam, which basically allows ocean-going vessels to go much further up the Yangtze River. So it's opening up cities of the interior, that cities we now, in 2007, consider second-tier cities. But there are cities that easily in the future could become first-tier cities.
Okay, so we've made the case for second-tier cities. What are some challenges?
One thing to look at is traditional infrastructure. These second-tier cities don't have the developed public transit as far as metro lines or anything like that. Highways, for sure. They don't have the ring roads built, the equivalent of like the belt lines in North America, and certainly the international airports aren't up to the standards we expect, some of the seaports even toward the coast and the second-tier cities. But I think an important point to remember is kind of the business infrastructure, too. In these cities, in the second-tier cities, I don't think that a lot of people, business people, are as well-versed in contracts, international business contracts, or, for lack of a better term, Western-friendly ways of doing business. I think a lot more is the business is not, I emphasize, is not on a arm's length basis. It's more or less on a friendly basis or getting to know people basis. also, you know, connections are really important. So these cities make it very difficult for people versed in Western ways of doing business. And also, another thing I wanted to emphasize, that government in these second-tier cities, government oversight and involvement in business is much greater, whereas Shanghai seems to be very hands-off for the most part. I think the final problem is the human capital issue. It was mentioned recently also on an issue of The Economist, the news magazine, that it's hard to find trained staff, especially managers or highly skilled manufacturing workers that are probably easily or much, you know, far easily found on the coast.
Are there times when locating in a tier one city like Shanghai is the best idea?
First off, these cities are so far ahead with their international friendly or international contact friendly business environments. You know, pretty much in Shanghai, English is the universal language amongst a lot of the business people. The financial infrastructure stuff, as far as banks, other financial accounting agencies, accountancies, and things like that, are very much geared toward the international business community. Beijing offers obvious advantages, being the capital, and that government is still so important in the Chinese economy. That's obvious as well. But I think these cities, like, and once again, I'll return to Shanghai. Shanghai is the commercial center, and a lot of your large firms, such as General Motors and numerous other North American large firms, have their offices there. So I think if you want to be near the centers of investment for these firms, you want to have where their purchasing agents are. I think it's very important to set up there. They have free trade zones. There are international airline flights from both Canada and the U.S. flying to these cities. So I think even though the expenses are high in terms of office leases, rents, and as far as human capital, as far as salaries and wages, they're very high. These cities still offer so many externalities. And also for Western staff who are relocated to these cities, they're much more Western-friendly cities, just as far as the general infrastructure, public transit, and everything. So these cities still offer great advantages. It's not like there's a wholesale exodus from Beijing, Shanghai, and Guangzhou to the interior of China.
Mm-hmm. So it's clear that China is not just one big market. There's a lot of diversity there. What advice would you give Canadian firms who will be approaching this complex market?
I think face-to-face contacts are very important. Once again, a lot of Western firms set up a website and expect to do business right off there. And a lot of firms have gotten burned with contracts and things like that, or they try to do business via fax. And face-to-face contacts are very important. Just to give you an example of that, I was looking over some of the Canadian manufacturers and exporters data from their 2006 survey of manufacturers. And they were asking, the survey asked a lot of Canadian manufacturers what their number one strategy was for market expansion in China. And the overwhelming response, by almost a margin of two over the next highest response, was travel to China. They just said that the face-to-face contact is very important. And this came from the data set that was limited to the firms who are already doing business in China. So I think they realized the importance of face-to-face knowledge.
Professor Kalafsky, thanks for speaking with me today.
Glad to help you out. Thanks so much.
I've been speaking with Professor Ronald Kalafsky of the University of Tennessee. He was in Knoxville. So how are Canadian companies doing in China? Well, Roots Canada, the iconic Canadian brand famous for its beaver logo and green philosophy, is now making its move into China. I had the chance to speak with Michael Budman, co-founder of Roots Canada, about the company's expansion in China. This is what he had to say.
I think there's 44 stores in Asia right now, and the intention is for there to be 300 stores in Asia between Hong Kong, China. We have 23 stores in Taiwan right now today, which is a great market for us. Korea, Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand. So, you know, people love Canada all over the world. They appreciate it so much more than Canadians do. They understand the natural beauty, the resources, the culture, the health aspect. So, you know, it's a great association for Roots, and it's great to be ambassador for Canada to the world. And I think in some ways we really are.
He also talked to me about the impact he expects China to have on his company. But Michael Budman also points out an interesting turn of the business tables, as it were.
The easiest thing I can tell you about China is a month in China is like a year in North America. And look, we want to be part of that. And, you know, it's going to make our company stronger and healthier and allow us to do more creative things, more charitable things. I think we're going to do extremely well, and I think that we're going to have a tremendous amount of product that is made in Canada selling in China.
He told me that while his company's experience in China has gone off without a hitch so far, he couldn't have done it without a solid partner.
It's been very smooth because our partner there, Lian Feng, is such a wonderful organization. So they, you know, they've found the retail locations, they've found the people. Our job is to supply them with, you know, incredible product. I can understand that it's very complicated, and that's why it's good that we have local people running it and taking care of it. I couldn't imagine doing that from Canada. That would become very complicated. So, you know, I mean, the acquisition of real estate is very difficult, finding the stores, the locations. This is something that, you know, really we're in Toronto unequipped to do. But our partners, Lian Feng, of course, this is what their expertise is in. It's been great, and they're very positive people, and they only are there to try and help promote trade within China. I think it's gonna help the world, and that's all we can hope for.
Another Canadian company, Neberking Coffee, is also hitting its stride in China. In 2004, the company made its first foray into the market. It now operates 23 stores in China with 8 more on the way. But the company is not limiting itself to coffee. Neberking also plans to import Canadian dairy cattle, farm a 1,000-acre tea plantation, and even open a bank. I spoke with James Wong of Neberking Coffee, and this is what he had to say about why his company is diversifying in China.
We are looking at China's economy. In 10, 20 years' time, China will be the most influential economical country in the world. So the opportunity is there. We are just planning ahead. That's why we do our business in China, looking at the vast market, a vast opportunity. Neberking Coffee Group, when we started small, and we didn't have the foresight to see the opportunity of diversifying, especially in China. And as we come in contact with more people and more facts about the possibility of diversifying in China, we went that direction. We have to start with the big cities, and then eventually we'll move inland to lesser cities. That will be our long-term goal.
I also asked Mr. Wong about what some of the obstacles were for him in setting up in China. While he says choosing a location is of prime importance, people matter most.
We did have some minor problem because of the Quanxi. I wonder if you have heard of this term. It's the relationship with the local authorities. But eventually, because so many stores has been opened, our names has spread over China, the major cities. And finding a location is less of a problem than before. That's the number one most important thing doing business in China. You have to know the people who is running the show, like who is running the government. And every city we develop our business there, we always manage to have direct dialogue with the high officials, either locally or provincially.
And Neberking is doing what it can to sell Canada in China, and he says the Canadian Trade Commissioner Service was there to help.
They render us a lot of help. We keep in touch with the embassy, and then they give us information about Canadian products, like we are trying to ship Canadian bottled water to China, and the embassy would give us information about vendors, like who we should contact. And then the embassy joined the opening ceremony in Beijing. So we keep close contact, and we don't feel alone working overseas from Canada. We feel like we have the country, the Canadian government, backing us up.
And with that, we have Andrew Smith on the line in Beijing. He is a senior trade commissioner at the Canadian Embassy in Beijing and brings considerable experience when it comes to helping Canadian businesses operate in China. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Thanks, Michael.
So you've heard what Professor Kolavsky and our two entrepreneurs had to say. How can other Canadian companies interested in China figure out what the right approach is for them?
Canadian companies that look at China need to approach this market with considerable patience and financing to fully research these various markets. There's no common theme or thread that can tie these together. And based on the competitive strengths and market entry model that Canadian companies are used to, they need to evaluate several of these locations for their potential for success. And I think, Michael, that's where the Trade Commissioner Service can really help. If I can give you an example, certainly companies should look to the Trade Commissioner Service first and foremost before they try the markets. We had a company, it was a company in the food export sector, that had partnered with a local venture in a major inland city in China. It was a large market. Wages were increasing. It was a very appealing market to try to penetrate. This Canadian company had product that required refrigeration before it could get to the consumer. However, our Canadian client never investigated the transportation linkages to get the product from the port of arrival to this inland city, and the partnership eventually failed after it was losing money with huge losses in product spoilage. Canadian companies need to look at all of these factors when they look at China. This is changing. China has massive plans for an interstate highway system, second only to the U.S., that will help companies penetrate further inland. But companies need to spend the time, our Canadian clients, to ensure that it has fully researched all of these aspects.
So what are the biggest challenges entrepreneurs will face as they look at all these factors?
Well, certainly the obstacles is information. The ability to find out who the key players are, who the government officials are, what some of the local licensing requirements might be, finding financing, the ability to undertake a due diligence in some of these cities. Because we have five offices throughout China, the embassy and the consulates general cover a vast territory. And as I mentioned at the outset, there's a huge number of cities to draw on. So the ability for companies to really know how some of these markets work and how business is done will be stretched. And again, that's why the Trade Commissioner Service can help provide advice and guidance. We have been to the majority of these top-tier cities where we would help Canadian companies focus on.
Okay, so if a Canadian company wants to set up a retail or manufacturing presence in China, what are the options?
For the longest time, Hong Kong was likely the only significant route into this market for many years. And I think Hong Kong-based companies have really honed that expertise in knowing how to penetrate and how to carry Western companies in to the market. One of the areas where we have worked with Hong Kong companies, Hong Kong-based companies on, is helping more of the SME Canadian firms. The rule of law is in Hong Kong is something that we're more familiar with from Canada. It's an English working society. Canadian companies are more at ease partnering with someone they know and trust in the Hong Kong market. And the Hong Kong partner brings forward a sense of expertise on the China market. They've been the entry pole into this market for many years and will likely continue. Since WTO accession in 2001, however, many mainland companies are now licensed to do international business, international trade. So Canadian companies, based on their risk aversion, their understanding of the market, have several options open to them. They can look to partner direct, but it takes a lot more time and patience and investigation on their part. Or they can look to go with a trusted market, a trusted partner, such as Hong Kong, possibly even Taiwan, in entering this market as well. So they have a couple of options based on their own unique needs, I guess is how you'd characterize it.
Is a partner always necessary then?
In some industries, it's required. In some sectors, it's an obligation, particularly if you're investing in China. But it's not always necessary. Some Canadian companies have gone it on their own as well.
Andrew, James Wong stressed the concept of guanxi, or relationships. Tell me more about this concept and why it matters in China.
Well, I think one would have to look back to Confucianism and see how relationships function and how that has helped shape today's thinking here in China. But what I would suggest for Canadian companies is, first and foremost, talk to our regional offices, talk to the Trade Commissioner Service in Canada. This market is not for everyone, and the regional officers can help shape the strategy and the thinking of Canadian companies before they try the market. China and Chinese businesses are all about business and getting the deal done. Decisions are being taken increasingly based on the pure business sense. It's a lot less based on Guanxi. Guanxi is a way to influence and cajole, but it isn't as important. It's not as reliable. Often it's formed with key officials in key positions where they can make things happen and get things done for you. They introduce you to local partners. And based on that strength of that introduction, the local partner often will choose to do business. It's probably 50-50 Guanxi and 50 based on just the business model. But increasingly, that Guanxi is only with one individual or one official. These officials do tend to get moved around the country quite regularly, so once the official has been moved, your Guanxi is lost. It's much more effective to have multiple relationships with a number of variety of government officials in these markets, local businesses as well. And it is necessary to get over here and meet with those people because trying to manage the project or an investment in a second-tier city from Canada is not effective. You will be the last one to know when things have gone wrong. And at that point, there's likely little options for you to try to remedy the situation. The best solution, the recommendation would be to have your own people in your project, in your investment. But failing that, you need to keep regular contact with your partner, your suppliers, local government officials, and that might mean being able to communicate in Mandarin, transmissions, communications, phone calls, visits as well, having a regular schedule of visits and senior visits. That shows the commitment to the market as well, and it carries a lot of value.
What would you say is the most important trend happening in China right now that will have the greatest impact on both China and Canadian companies?
The country is exploding, but I think that if I had to pick one trend or one development, Michael, that has the greatest impact, it will be urbanization. I mentioned at the outset about 40% of this country is currently urban. There's a plan to move it to 50%, so they have a 50-50 urban-rural split and within the next 10 years. But what that means is increasing each 1% increase in the urbanization means that China must add between 300 and 400 million square meters of housing. It consumes 1,800 square kilometers of land. They need another 140 million cubic meters of potable water, 640 million kilowatts of energy. And I could go on. I mean, the wastewater that's created, less and less farmland as it's being consumed for urban growth. Canadian companies with solutions in this area, in the production of food, in the treatment of sewage, in the other areas like energy supply, services and environmental, urban design, architectural design. These are great areas for Canadian companies to focus on as China continues to march along this growth pattern. It certainly is a bustling market, but it's not for everyone. It's concerns over IPR deter some firms from participating in the marketplace. There's challenges over transparency and adherence to the rule of law. And as I mentioned earlier, some of this is largely occurring in the second-tier and third-tier cities beyond the big cities here in China. But it all speaks to the need to research the market, to understand the environment, to foster good relationships with partners, with government, and first and foremost, to keep the Trade Commissioner Service apprised of your progress.
In fact, we'll be tackling some of the challenges you just mentioned in an upcoming podcast on managing risk in China. Any final pieces of advice for Canadian entrepreneurs, Andrew?
What we try to tell Canadian companies when thinking about China is think of the three P's, and that is be persistent, be patient, and have a presence.
Thanks for taking the time to do this, Andrew.
Thanks again. It was a pleasure talking to you guys.
Well, that's all for this podcast edition of Canada Export. Be sure to check us out online at infoexport.gc.ca to learn more about the benefits of the Canadian Trade Commissioner Service. And don't forget to visit international.gc.ca to subscribe to Canada Export, our twice-monthly magazine. I'm Michael Mancini, signing off for now.
This is a podcast from the Government of Canada.